Brr, it's chilly outside. 40 degrees, feels like 35. Going up to only 54 today, 58 tomorrow, 64 Wednesday, 52 Thursday. A little reinforcing shot of cold air, but dry, no rain, highs of 65 Saturday, and the only chance for showers as it stands now is next Saturday. Mike Dettelier joins us now to talk about a couple of different things. How you doing, Mike Dettelier?
I'm doing fine, Tommy. Thank you, brother.
Crescent City Connection lit up in purple and gold, or maybe blue and gold. I don't know if that's about LSU's new quarterback or not, but tell me about it.
Excuse me. No, Landon Clark, I got to see him play at Elon. I was watching some games, and I was like, man, who's this guy? Mm-hmm. He had no major college scholarships. He's from the Virginia high school ranks. But man, he's a playmaker, and he moves around real well, got really good running skills. What I'm so impressed with a young quarterback is how well he can process information out on the field. When to throw it and when to run it and when to throw it away. And I thought early on, he's a little bit of a streaky passer. He's not very tall. They list him at 6 foot. Mm-hmm. I'm not real sure if he's that tall. How well he can process it and gets it out real quick. Whoever has worked with him, he's taught him well on how to set your feet, get rid of the football quick. Quick release and really good decision maker. I think he's one of three quarterbacks Lane Kiffin will sign, but impressive guy. Again, people say, oh, Elon. Well, I stood on the sidelines and watched a kid from Incarnate Word as a true freshman. And he goes on from Incarnate Word to Washington State to Miami of Florida. He was the first pick in the draft last April, mm-hmm. Cam Ward. We just watched Trinidad Chambliss put on an absolute show in 2025 and into 2026, too, at Ole Miss. He started at Ferris State. A few years back, there was a young man who went to Butte Community College before he goes to California. His name is Aaron Rodgers. He's playing tonight. One day he'll walk into Canton, Ohio, in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Tommy, it's not where you start. It's where you kind of finish. Mm-hmm. And when I see Landon, man, he's a tough, tough guy. He takes some brutal shots sometimes. But the one thing with Lane Kiffin, And people like him, dislike him, okay, whatever, however you want to feel. He built that Ole Miss program because he could evaluate talent very well. And so you starting to see some of that here of guys he's brought in you might not have heard of, but he's got a really good eye for talent. And Coach O had told me about that. He said, Mike, he sees the field like it's in slow motion for all 22 players. He sees it that way.
You're talking about Lane Kiffin now.
Lane Kiffin. Yeah. He said, you know, he said, listen, I'm a line coach. I watch offensive line, defensive line. Mm-hmm. He can see all 22 guys like it's in slow motion, and he knows who can play and who can't. And he told me that a couple years back, sort of repeated that throughout the time frame. And look at that squad he built at Ole Miss. It was impressive.
Since we're talking college football, you see Miami beating Indiana or not? What's the spread?
No.
Do we know
no.
what the spread is?
Oh, it's pretty high. I think it's either 8 or 8.5 maybe. Uh-huh. Maybe even higher before it's over with. But Tommy Day is such a complete team. And, you know, if you close your eyes or squint it a little bit, you'd swear you watch an Alabama of 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. The way they coached, the way they played.
Complete.
Man, they so well coached, fundamentally sound, very disciplined football team. And they beat you in every phase, offense, defense, special teams.
And now Miami playing in their home stadium, but still a 7.5-point underdog.
Yeah, that goes to show you what people think of Indiana. Tommy, we couldn't have had this conversation 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. about Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Not football.
No, because we grew up in an era of Bobby Knight and college basketball. Mm-hmm. They were dominant in those years. But now you see it with Cignetti, his ability, similar to Kiffin, but in a different way, recognizing talent, developing talent, and then I've said it before, team, the Gene Hackman line in Hoosiers. That's what they play. I mean, they play team football across the board, and he's been able to sell them on that. And I wouldn't be surprised, as a young man that grew up not too far from me, mm-hmm. That might be announcing his commitment to Indiana fairly soon, too.
Okay. You want to mention the name?
No, I'll let him make that announcement. But I think he is leaning in that direction. But he was pretty close to where we are today. Playing college football, and I think he's on the verge of heading to Indiana for one more year.
All right. Thank you, Mike. 620, we'll pick it up here. We'll come back, talk about the NFL. Traffic now, WWL. 627, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Election day, inauguration day. Thank God it's not election day. Inauguration day, we got all of it for you here on WWL. I have the details coming up. Mike Dettelier, our guest, talking about NFL football. Any surprises over the weekend thus far, Mike, for you in the NFL?
I can't say there was really any surprise. I was surprised how well the Panthers played the Rams.
Me too.
Because, Tommy, watching that early on, I thought the Rams were going to blow them out of the water. Mm-hmm. And the Panthers hung in there. Man, late, they had the lead. And you saw Stafford, bang, 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 get them in there and end up winning the game. But isn't the NFL the greatest reality TV show we got?
You talking
about
the Eagles?
Look at every one of those games.
Oh.
Came down to the basically last possession other than last night's game against, Chargers Patriots.
I thought you were talking about A.J. Brown and Sirianni getting into it.
Oh, they do that almost weekly. So it's almost a repeat. I've seen this show before.
The Housewives of Philadelphia.
Yeah. It's one of them type of deals. Man, the Eagles look like a dysfunctional team. And I was the only one we did pick six. I picked the 49ers and the points. I didn't know if they would win, but I thought they could keep it fairly close. And to see the 49ers with all the injuries, Shanahan never complained. He never gave this idiotic comment of next man up. Mm-hmm. His deal was, listen, we're going to coach the guys we got, and we're going to do the very best we can. And to see that team somehow survive, and now they move on, they play Seattle. Now, I think that's the end of the road because, man, Seattle is playing some really good football.
And no Kittle. He's gone.
And now no Kittle. But, man, they've faced so much adversity, and Shanahan's done just a super job. And then the Bears, Green Bay, to watch that game. That we saw two of them in the regular season come down to the last possession. And then we watched again a Thursday, almost a third game, very similar. And Caleb Williams bringing the Bears back and having them put a W
real
up on
quick,
the board.
Thoughts on the night, Texans taking on the old man, the gray beard Aaron Rodgers.
Man, Texans defense is good. I'm not real sure. They don't have the two best edge rushers in Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson, and the two best cover corners in Lassiter and Stingley Jr., in the game. I like the Texans tonight.
Like the under?
Yeah, because I don't think there's going to be a lot of scoring on either side, to be honest.
Thank you, Mike. Have a good day.
Thank you,
we'll
brother.
Talk to you again. All right, Mike, to tell you, you'll be second-guessing tonight, right?
Yep, second-guessing tonight. We'll take this till 7 o'clock.
We'll talk about it later on. Right now, we'll take a break for WWL First News. 6:45, quarter till 7, spectacular sunrise with some violet and pink and blue hues of sunrise in the sky behind the Crescent City Connection lit up in purple and gold. And it's going to be a great day for the city of New Orleans with the inauguration of Helena Moreno. And let's hope it just portends 4 years of great things to come. Becky Mowbray joins us now, President and CEO of BGR. How you doing, Becky?
I'm doing great, Tommy. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Thanks for coming on. I know you didn't come on for this, but you got to be a little optimistic about where we stand as a city, huh?
Absolutely. Today is an important day for the city of New Orleans and the metro region as a whole.
Let's talk about the report about paying for drainage and what it does. Tell me what prompted the report and what did you find?
Sure. So as you know, our drainage system in New Orleans faces major challenges, especially in terms of funding. And the existing revenue sources that we have to pay for drainage so that people's homes and businesses and cars don't flood are insufficient. The city spends right now, or the Sewerage and Water Board spends right now, about $90 million a year on drainage maintenance. But it actually needs about $125 to $150 million a year, and even significantly more for capital projects. So we did this report because there are likely to be questions going before voters in the not too distant future about how we should pay for drainage. And that's because two of the three taxes that pay for drainage at the Sewerage and Water Board are going to expire in the next 6 years.
Are we talking about millages here, Becky?
Yeah, the millages, two of the three millages are going to expire. One expires next year, another expires in 2031. And so there needs to be a conversation about how does the city of New Orleans pay for drainage.
Let me slow you down a little bit. Let me just slow down a little bit here so we can understand, because it's early. So $90 million, that's what they spend, which is insufficient. They need $125 to $150. So if these millages are renewed, that's still going to keep them at $90 million, which is still going to keep them short of $125 to $150. Am I got it right there or not?
There's that. And if you just renew the existing taxes, that means that existing taxpayers would see a big increase in their bills. But there is another path forward that the Sewerage and Water Board is considering, and that is to create something called a stormwater fee. And it's a fee, not a tax. So it would mean that nonprofits, that could be things like universities, hospitals, any religious institutions, would need to pay into it. And also governmental bodies would also need to pay for drainage. And right now, those entities benefit from the drainage system, but because they're nonprofit, they don't pay taxes, so they don't support it. So there's going to be a conversation that occurs possibly as soon as this year about what's the right mix here of does the Sewerage and Water Board propose adding a stormwater fee into the mix? Because if they do that, it would broaden the base of payers for the system, and it would bring in new money with less of a burden to, you know, the homes and businesses that pay property taxes.
And let me go back for a second. 125 to 150 million is what's needed. That's not including capital projects. So that's just to maintain what we have now and to keep the drains open, to keep the water getting to the canals. Tell me what that is.
Yes. It's just to maintain and repair things in the existing drainage system. That's the system we've got. The capital projects, and great question on your part, Tommy, is really scary. So it's estimated that there's about $800 million in capital projects that are needed for the Sewerage and Water Board, but they only allocate $7 million a year.
Now let me just repeat that. $7 million allocated, $800 needed. That's kind of analogous to it. It has nothing to do with this. I'm just making an analogy, all right? That's kind of similar to the police overtime estimate in the budget and what was actually needed. Am I wrong?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what it said to me, you know, when we were working on this report and the research team, you know, came up with these figures, we're never going to get there. If you're only allocating $7 million a year for capital projects and we've got a backlog of capital projects that are needed of $800 million. You're not going to get there with
If you don't have enough money to maintain what you have, that list of capital projects is going to keep going up, maybe faster than $7 million a year, right? I mean, you're not going to even keep maintain where you are. Let me take a break. Becky will pick it up. I'm not trying to interrupt you. I'm just trying to make it understandable at this early in the morning.
This is great.
It's a mess, man. I'm telling you, it really is. And the only way it's going to get fixed is people paying more money. And we'll talk about that when we come back. Becky Mowbray, President and CEO of BGR, talking about how the Sewerage and Water Board can come up with a fair and transparent plan to pay for drainage in New Orleans. Maybe if everybody had a pan, it might, might help. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 656, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Becky Mowbray, I guess, President and CEO of BGR. Becky, the feeling I'm getting is, I want to buy a house, or I own a house, actually, and I called somebody in to look at it, and the plumber came and looked and said, okay, boy, you're looking at a lot here to maintain this and a lot to fix this up. But unlike buying a house, nobody has a choice of walking away here, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, the reason why we did this report is because, you know, there needs to be this conversation now about how are we going to pay for drainage? What's the best way to do it? And you know, when we did our candidate Q&As last summer for the mayor and council elections, and just talking to people around the community, you know, there's a lot of folks who are aware that this stormwater fee may be something out there as a proposal, but everybody's like, I could potentially, nonprofits and things are, and public officials are potentially interested in it, but they're wary because they want to know that, that it's going to, if you create a stormwater fee, that it's going to actually make a difference. And public trust in the Sewerage and Water Board is low because of all the, you know, billing issues they've had in the last 10 years and things like that. And so what we did at BGR was come up with this report to put out recommendations for what are the hallmarks of a well-designed stormwater management fee so that it would help public officials, elected officials, folks at nonprofits, and just regular citizens follow the debate whenever it comes up and figure out whether, you know, the Sewerage and Water Board is coming up with a good proposal and then help shape that proposal. Because, you know, if our community does this, you got to do it right. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be very important to figure this out. So BGR doesn't actually have a stance for or against a stormwater fee at this point because the Sewerage and Water Board hasn't put out a specific proposal. What we're advocating for is a high quality proposal.
It seems like we only have 20 seconds here left, but it seems like we need to get the Sewerage and Water Board with a quasi-state city organization. It seems like everybody has a hand in it, but nobody's responsible for it. And it seems like you need to get it away from the state and make it all with the city. Thoughts?
We have advocated for a while for a change in the structure of the Sewerage and Water Board. We don't think in its current form, we don't think it serves people well. And you could fold it into the city or you could really strengthen its independence. But
thank you, Becky.